Say the name Boba Fett, and most folks will recall the mysterious badass bounty hunter from the original Star Wars films. They might also remember that he got thrown into the Sarlacc pit in Return of the Jedi, where we assumed he'd get slowly digested over 1,000 years. He got out. We learned that much at least in the Disney Plus series The Mandalorian. Exactly how he escaped that grisly fate and what became of him later is the subject of the spin-off series The Book of Boba Fett, which stars Temuera Morrison and Ming-Na Wen. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about The Book of Boba Fett on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me today is iHeartRadio producer Joelle Monique. Hey, Joelle.
Hi, Glenn.
Also back with us, returning to the show, is Laura Sirikul. She's a freelance writer and movie critic. Welcome back, Laura.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. Boba Fett has had a convoluted history both on and off the screen. He was introduced in an animated sequence in the Cheesetastic Star Wars Holiday Special in 1978. 2 years later, he'd make his first big screen appearance in The Empire Strikes Back as a bounty hunter hired to retrieve Han Solo. We didn't learn much about him in that original trilogy, as he didn't say much. George Lucas conceived of him as Clint Eastwood's man with no name if he had a jetpack. Violent, yes, but with a personal code. Boba Fett was available as an action figure through the mail before he appeared in the movies, and that turns out to be important because not knowing much about the guy, plus having his action figure be so hard to get, combined to make fans go nuts about the mysterious Boba Fett. All of his essential mystery would pretty much vanish with the Star Wars prequels, where we learn that under that cool-ass helmet, Boba Fett is the son, sort of, long story, of Jango Fett, the man who became the basis of the clone army. In The Book of Boba Fett, Temuera Morrison plays the title character. The series vacillates between flashbacks to what happened to him after he escaped the Sarlacc pit and the present day as he takes over Jabba the Hutt's criminal empire on Tatooine. His lieutenant, Fennec Shand, is played by Ming-Na Wen, and they are jockeying for position among just really a lot of competing interests. We'll talk about it. We've seen only the first 4 episodes of the Disney Plus series, and we will be talking about what's happened in all of those, so be warned. Joelle, what are your thoughts on The Book of Boba Fett?
Okay, so it's not a home run, and we're gonna be okay with that.
Yeah, we are.
What it is truly doing for me as a fan is expanding this universe. Are we learning about the history of Tatooine? Are we going to get into how it went from an ocean planet to a desert planet and solidify some of these details in actual canon? Woo, that's good stuff. That's spicy. It's also giving us a lot of dope secondary characters, which, let's be honest, has sort of been the Disney Plus like go-to. It's like, this character, okay? We could maybe do a movie with them. Great people are playing these folks. I'll take it. I'm enjoying it.
Sure.
It is fun. Some of the choices are weird. Some of the episodes, so much better than other episodes. Episode 2, oh, chef's kiss. A train scene. We're getting like Western stuff, gag shots. I love it. But yeah, we'll see how it ends. It's hard to make a full assumption about the show, but so far I'm having fun, but not a home run.
I agree with Joelle. It's exposition where we are learning more about Tatooine. I also feel like it's giving us a story of a character that, you know, has been a mystery for so long and it's been beloved by so many people. We're finally getting the story that he deserves. Yeah, there's a lot of missteps, but there's also a lot of expands this universe that we never knew about. And I really love learning about this character that we just knew as this quiet assassin who's supposedly the best bounty hunter in the universe. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually interesting to see beyond that of who this character is and allowing audiences who grew up with him to kind of like see more layers and peel back layers. So I'm really excited to see his world expand more, and especially since it is going to build the world of Tatooine and also build on other characters that we're going to see as part of Boba Fett's life and the Mandalorians.
That's true. We are getting more. Just a hell of a lot of Tatooine. My personal taste stuff, before we get to the merits of the show for me, I am on record as finding this particular corner of the Star Wars galaxy with your scoundrels and your smugglers and your wretched hives of scum and villainy, that's not for me. Give me the space wizards with their laser swords. Also, this literal corner of the Star Wars galaxy, Tatooine, can we please get the hell off Tatooine? Luke told us in the very first film, well, if there's a bright center to the universe, you're in the planet that it's farthest from. False. Everything in this franchise revolves around Tatooine. It's got this inescapable narrative gravitational pull. Everybody keeps coming back, including a guy who was almost slowly digested for 1,000 years there. That's like me going back to high school. What are you doing? Why would you go back there? I never understood the Boba Fett fascination in the fandom.
Yeah, it's a costume.
Well, see, that's it. But I don't know, Joelle, how you look at that lineup of bounty hunters in Empire and think, yeah, that guy's cool, when you got Bosk and Zuckuss. Mm-hmm. But this show is made for Boba Fett fans aching to be serviced, and I think this show does that determinedly, assiduously. And you know what? They're going to keep cranking out these shows, and the Obi-Wan show is coming, and that's the Space Wizard stuff for me. So I will be serviced at some point. But to the specific merits of this show, one of the critiques that I think we made on the show about The Mandalorian was how much it seemed like a video game as much as a show. You got missions, you got side quests, you got fetch quests, periodically upgraded your armor and your weapons. I think this show is just as guilty of that because its reliance on that back-to-tank framing device for very lengthy flashbacks, that seems like so many cutscenes. But I'm going to tell you, I am still in. And why? Because of the casting. It is actors I love in space western drag going pew, 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 pew. And it's the Laura Dern in Last Jedi effect.
Yes.
I see that.
I can't fight that. I mean, sure, Morrison, Ming-Na Wen, but you got Steven Root. You got Danny Trejo. Jennifer Beals shows up. I mean, what a feeling.
Killing her role.
Yes.
Killing her role, right? And you got this one actor who is buried under makeup, but whose face and delivery is so expressive.
Yes.
I want a show built around him. That's David Pasquese.
Majordomo.
Give me the book of David Pasquese. And yes, of course, they are using Matt Berry, but man, they're using a paper-thin slice of what that guy can do. But he's there. But let me ask you this. This is not the Boba Fett that seized fanboy imaginations back in the day, right? Mm-mm. He's not ruthless, efficient, laconic, mysterious. He's not even really a badass. They've kind of taken that all away. He's kind of a softy here. He doesn't want to rule through fear. He wants to be loved. He forgives slights. And you show him a big animal, and he's just a big old cuddle bug, which is kind of my favorite thing, actually. I kind of really dig that. And I think what the show is trying to say there is that this interlude he had with the Tusken Raiders, his very Lawrence Arabia slash Dune slash Dances with Wolves interlude among the Tusken Raiders, that made him grow as a person. Mm. He's not a lone wolf anymore. He wants to be part of a pack. But it is a big disconnect between the Boba Fett we knew. How is that landing on you guys, Joelle?
I'm really enjoying it, and for multiple reasons. Like, one, like, yes, there's this idea of, like, the Dances with Wolves of it all. But the difference is, like, Temuera Morrison is Maori, and he's bringing a lot of, like, indigenous culture and inflection into the storyline. And the culture of Star Wars is no longer just sand people. They're Tusken Raiders, right? And now we have an entire cultural background for that. And for Boba Fett to sort of come out of the costume, you couldn't do the face and shield after Mandalorian. It doesn't make sense to do it back to back. Like, oh, here we are in another costume, avoiding our feelings. So I really like the fact that here's this older bounty hunter who's sort of at the end of his rope. He doesn't want to be a soldier anymore, particularly a foot soldier. He mentions, like, you know, these things could be resolved. So we're smarter than them. We understand how these transactions actually work because we're always in the middle. I think that's a fascinating approach to a character that has been, I mean, let's face it, like, very one note for the entire duration of his existence. I know that it has upset a lot of fanboys. I've talked to several of the guys in my life who are like, where is the badass bounty hunter I fell in love with? What is the point of this? And I was like, well, the point is to grow. Like, I truly feel you would be bored if you just saw the same thing again. You could certainly couldn't do it in an extended television series. It would have to be like his last ride, and then he dies at the end, and you're like, oh, he's so epic, which is cool and fun. And but I think this is for Star Wars fans who are getting older to sort of have this space to, like, contemplate, like, what do we want to do with our twilight years and how are we going to spend them? And I think that that's interesting and fun. And so it's a swing, and I appreciate that Disney took a swing.
We already have a show of a lone wolf kind of character with The Mandalorian, where he's like, I do this alone. I work alone. And I feel like if we have the same with Boba Fett, it's just going to be the same situation. So I feel like they had to expand Boba Fett to be different from The Mandalorian, away from the lone wolf. Mm-hmm. Boba Fett is, of course, a one-dimensional character from before. Like, we only know him as, oh, he's a badass. That's why he went through a scene where he's reborn with the water and everything. And I think that they're trying to just keep away from the Mandalorian sense of, like, the Western of, like, loneliness and more of the tribe thing. And he is Maori, and they have that scene with the Tusken Raiders and the cultural aspect, and that was beautiful. Yeah, they're giving him his golden years, and he's kind of realizing family is important, especially when you see the scene of him seeing his father, Jango, fly away, and he's alone. So I think it gets to that point where it's like, you can't always be alone. And mm-hmm. so I appreciate the contrasting of those two shows and those two characters. And then I love the fact that he recruited Fennec Shand to be part of his tribe. So I'm okay because Fennec Shand could do no wrong for me.
Right. I mean, Fennec Shand is kind of where he was as yeah. like, I work alone. And he's trying to impress upon her that there's more to life than that.
Living with the Tuscans has made you soft.
No. It's made me strong. You can only get so far without a tribe.
Can I ask you guys what you think of the mods? The mods are these young people on scooter bikes or whatever who are modifying their bodies to turn themselves into cyborgs. They're literal cyberpunks. Yes. And we learned with this that fishnets and finger gloves are now part of the Star Wars canon. They are proving, as a group, very controversial among the fans. What do you guys make mm-hmm. of them?
I'm enjoying them, and here's why. Again, if you're going to have, like, evolve elements of Star Wars, then, like, really go for it. And we've seen these attachments and fake limbs and modifications throughout literally the entire history of Star Wars. They've been around. And so I think it's exciting to be like, what would people do if they could enhance themselves? Again, knowing that there are superpowered wizards floating throughout space, why wouldn't you want to give yourself an advantage, particularly in a world where there's a whole bunch of different types of species who can do different things? Like, it makes sense in order to stay competitive and especially bring color into Star Wars. I'm really excited to see, like, neon colors. I'm excited that it's, like, a lovely little tribute to George Lucas and his love for hot rods. Like, right. I think that
exactly.
it's bowling over into the culture and bringing out new things, and that's exciting.
Yeah, I did appreciate they had the cybernetic stuff because it kind of explains Luke's hand when they replaced it with the bionic hand.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But now you see there's a history of people altering themselves to be cybernetic. And that gives it a little history with the doctor scene. I mean, it's very different because you see this Western and then you see these colorful characters come in with the super clean, colorful bikes, which I'm like, even Tatooine, it should be dirty. But anyway, I call them the Power Rangers because it's like the colors. You know, I feel like they're trying to cater to younger crowds too, because we have to remember that Star Wars isn't just for the older fanboys who grew up with it. It's for new people who are coming into this world. And I feel like they're trying to bring some levity into Boba Fett. He's always been the serious, like, character. And I feel like these mods are, you're trying to create this tribe, but you need a younger group to grow. You can't just have older people because then they'll die off. But you need to grow your team, and even different generations, you have to accept it. Execution-wise, I'm like, okay, it's too colorful for me, but I understand the reasons.
I will also say anything that brings Thundercat into the Star Wars universe is an instant sell for me. The minute that Juicy Bass came in, my brother was like, is Thundercat about to show up? And then he did, and it was sensational. More Thundercat, please.
Can we talk about the performances of the two leads, Temuera Morrison and Ming-Na Wen? They're great. The fact that they are the two leads is great. But both their characters are of a very familiar, cool, affectless Soldier of Fortune vibe. There are different stages of that.
Agree.
But if you're an adolescent boy, that's what a hero is to you. Someone who's tough, who nobody can get to. Mm-hmm. For the rest of the population, having central characters who are giving you so little emotionally is a big risk. How's that working for you?
It's been one of my pet peeves of the show because Finnick is such an interesting and cool character. They gave her armor that it completely matches Boba Fett and like, ooh, what can these things do? And it looks so freaking cool. Instantly, I'm like, I need to know more about her. Mm-hmm. We don't even get fully into like what annoys her and how is she viewing this partnership. It's all sort of in very quick glances. Give this woman something to do. I'm really hoping we're about to like turn that point and maybe they're like, well, she's got to get used to Boba or whatever. But like, I need more Ming-Na. Like, she's sensational. And I feel like they're really putting a limit on what we could be getting.
No, I agree. Because Ming-Na Wen is one of the most talented actresses. And I do appreciate both of them being older. They're in 50s, 60s. And the fact that they're the two leads, people of color, it's amazing. But they are not giving her enough. And I thought the last episode would be able to tell us like why she decides to join them. But they didn't give us enough of her intentions. And I feel like it is a waste. Like, and I feel like they're focusing so much on Boba and his story that they're ignoring his right-hand man who is so talented and is on par with him. I understand it's limited on episodes, but there's still time. If you're going to add like little specks of like mods and all this stuff, you could add more stuff for Ming-Na Wen, Fennec Shand. And I really hope that they kind of expand her character a little bit more if there is a second season.
And I think there's plenty of space. She's been in multiple scenes and she's just standing in the background. The rooftop scene in at the end of episode one, it's kind of interesting. But then they didn't even give her any cool like tools or weapons to like. I was like, she's in a chase scene. Like any other character, you guys would have pulled out all the stops. This is her first like major fight scene in this series. They got to do better by Ming-Na.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also want to add, like, I really appreciate that Star Wars is bringing some cultural aspects to their universe with the Tusken Raiders, and I appreciate them adding layers to them and their characters and culture regarding indigenous tribes that belong on Tatooine. Like, it brings so much political aspect to it that you never realized it, because you think of Tusken Raiders when you first see them as, you know, oh, they're desert people, like, oh, they're scary, they're attacking us. You only know what Luke Skywalker's interactions with them. And that was like one dimension. But now you see like it's been their lands for years, and it's reflective of the indigenous population and what they're going through and they've gone through. And I think Temuera Morrison was like, yeah, this is important to me. And, you know, because he's Maori. And I feel like it just adds so much heart to these characters and to the universe.
Mm-hmm. Can we also talk about, I really like the Lucasfilm Group being like, you know what? We are an organization really built by artists and guys who are doing miniatures and getting into digital stuff. And then for them to constantly bring makeup artists and combat training people into actual roles. Like, Black Chrysanthemum is played by a makeup artist. And of course, that's why we're getting this incredible facial performance. He understands how the makeup works. And it is so good. Literally one of my new favorite characters. I'm absolutely obsessed.
Yeah, this character we're talking about is a hulking Wookiee with zappy brass knuckles, which I just love.
I just think like being able to bring the artist into the screen and like really dig into like what they're capable of, it just brings such a fun, like loving layer to all of their work. And I'm glad to see it continue here.
And there's so much practical effects in this thing, right? I mean, the Bantha's mouth and tongue, practical effects. That's a puppet. And I just love that. I love seeing that again in 2022.
I really appreciate the animatronics. They actually made me care about Rancor. Mm-hmm. That's my new Baby Yoda for me. They have used a lot of practical effects with the Bantha. The Bantha was amazing. It actually makes you care more about the Bantas as well. Mm-hmm. When Boba Fett was saying goodbye to the Banta, it just felt more authentic to me. Because like, sure, go make baby Bantas, you know, go be free. And I felt like it was more authentic than if it was a digital, like, goodbye, and like just go, and it's like a digital thing walking away. I really love that it added more authenticity to it.
Huh, I agree. You guys are winning me over on this show, I think. I'm more favorably inclined toward it than I was at the beginning of this conversation. We want to know what you think about the Book of Boba Fett. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you, Glenn. This was fun.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. Yeah.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you got a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all tomorrow when we will be talking about the new film, A Hero.